ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Although King Puranjan should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Foolish people do not know that every individual soul is responsible for his own actions and reactions in life. As long as a living entity in the form of a child or boy is innocent, it is the duty of the father and mother to lead him into a proper understanding of the values of life. When a child is grown, it should be left up to him to execute the duties of life properly. The parent, after his death, cannot help his child. A father may leave some estate for his children's immediate help, but he should not be overly absorbed in thoughts of how his family will survive after his death. This is the disease of the conditioned soul. Not only does he commit sinful activities for his own sense gratification, but he accumulates great wealth to leave behind so that his children may also gorgeously arrange for sense gratification. In any case, everyone is afraid of death. And therefore death is called bhaya, or fear. Although King Puranjan was engaged in thinking of his wife and children, death did not wait for him. Death does not wait for any man. It will immediately carry out its duty. Since death must take away the living entity without hesitation, it is the ultimate God-realization of the atheists, who spoil their lives thinking of country, society, and relatives to the neglect of God consciousness. In this verse, the word atad arhanam is very significant, for it means that one should not be overly engaged in welfare activities for one's family members, countrymen, society, and community. None of these will help a person to advance spiritually. Unfortunately, in present-day society, so-called educated men have no idea what spiritual progress is. Although they have the opportunity in the human form of life to make spiritual progress, they remain misers. They use their lives improperly and simply waste them thinking about the material welfare of their relatives, countrymen, society, and so on. One's actual duty is to learn how to conquer death. Lord Krishna states the process of conquering death in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. After giving up this body, one who is fully Krishna conscious does not accept another material body, but returns home back to Godhead. Everyone should try to attain this perfection. Unfortunately, instead of doing so, People are absorbed in thoughts of society, friendship, love, and relatives. This Krishna consciousness movement, however, is educating people throughout the world and informing them how to conquer death. Harim vina nasritim taranti. One cannot conquer death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, entitled Puranjan Becomes a Woman in the Next Life, Text 22. Herein Narada Muni is very expertly transforming the heart of the king Prachinibharishat. Prachinibharishat was descendant of Dhruva Maharaj, father of the Prachetas, all great devotees. So naturally the Lord is going to show special mercy upon him. This is an eternal truth, that when one surrenders to the Lord, then all those who are dear to us, all those who are related to us, will be a special object of the Lord's affectionate mercy. We find in Lord Chaitanya's Lila, even the dog who Shivananda Sen showed affection to was given the mercy of elevation to Vaikuntha. Amoga, who was an envious, blasphemous person, just because he was son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was given Lord Chaitanya's special mercy. And that maidservant Duki, who was always in the background just collecting water and giving it to the devotees to offer to Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya saw her very simple service to Srivas Thakur, the maidservant of the servant of the servant, he asked Srivas, "What is her name?" He said, "Her name is Duki, the miserable one." And Lord Chaitanya said, "This name Duki does not sit in my heart properly. Today I call her Suki." And just by giving her that name, he also gave her Krishna Prem. Why? Because she was the object of the affection of Srivas Thakur. So to be connected to a Vaishnav is a very, very great benediction. Therefore, the greatest thing we could do for all those who are near and dear to us is surrender to Krishna, so that Krishna will show his causeless mercy upon them as well. So Narada Muni came to the palace of Prachinibharishat, and he knew that he was a big king. How kings, cultured, respectful. Certainly if Narada Muni would have just preached to him, "King, you are in illusion, you are in Maya, you are too much attached to this body, to your fruit of activities, and to all the sense gratification connected to it," what would the king have done? Probably he would have very patiently and respectfully listened, but his heart would have been shut, closed, tight. Because as soon as a person's defensive, it's very hard to, you may conquer with logic, his intelligence, but do you really penetrate his heart? So Narada Muni was a very practical and expert preacher. He wanted to go to the core of this king's heart and transform him. Now, people who have this inclination towards sense gratification, they taste nectar in the form of prajalpa or gossip. Yes?
hearing about other people's problems, other people's scandals, other people's fall downs, other people's faults. It's very sweet. Prabhupada explains, for people who are like flies, stool is very sweet. If you have a very nice, healthy body, but you have one infectious sore, which may just be a centimeter in size, that's where the fly will just put all its concentration. So people who like to hear about the faults of others are like flies. But a honeybee, even if you put a honeybee in a sewage area where there's all kinds of grotesque substances, if there's one flower with pollen, the honeybee will focus all its attention only there. So this is Vaishnava, always looking for the nectar of Krishna in every situation. In fact, Rupa Goswami explains, what is the natural quality of a devotee? Has no tendency, has no inclination to find faults in others. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami describes, even if faults were there, if it was a Vaishnava, no, I will not listen. He's chanting Hare Krishna, he's devotee, that's good. Sometimes as a matter of service, with a selfless service attitude, like a physician, we have to reveal the disease to treat somebody or to help other people not catch the disease. But that's an austerity. There's no nectar in that. If it has to be done, then it will be done. But a devotee is naturally looking to see the good, to see Krishna. So yes, people who are attached to sense gratification have a natural inclination to prajalpa. In one lecture, Prabhupada describes what the process of prajalpa does to one. Prajalpa means basic, fault finding and useless mundane talk that does not in any way bring us closer to God, directly or indirectly. He said, when somebody speaks prajalpa, that person's very life force is just being drained through that person's mouth. Our spiritual inclinations, our taste for hearing about Krishna, is just being stripped away from us when we speak and hear these mundane topics. But yet, look at all the newspapers and magazines and cinemas and television shows and all the different dialogues people are having. It's an addiction. So Narada Muni, he didn't want to tell the king he was in Maya because he understood the king will not open his heart to receive the medicine. So he started talking about how someone else was in Maya. Another king. And King Prachini Barhishat was very, very eager to hear this. His heart, his ears, his heart was wide open. Ah, Paranjan, who would tell me more about this Paranjan? And he revealed how he was attached to his body, how he was attached to fruitive activities, how he was attached to religiosity without real realization of God or the soul, and what the results are going to be. Just so much of the torment of attraction, attachment, aversion, and then death comes, and what a horrible, painful death it is. And he listened to every word so carefully. He was transformed. And toward the end of the story, he realizes, you're talking about me. But the medicine was already injected. So, good food, even if it's very nutritious, has minimal value if we have no power to digest it. And that is really expert preacher. A person who can take the essence of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and present it in such a way that that medicine is, that nutrition is digested by the candidate. So Srila Prabhupada, in the parampara of Narada Muni, is presenting this very powerful narration to King Prajini Bharisha. In today's verse, King Puranjan is on the verge of death after living a life of so much material wealth, prosperity, fame, power, beauty, every type of enjoyment that we could imagine. He's about to die. And is he thinking back, what a wonderful life it was? He's suffering. He's suffering because he's attached. Actually, all suffering is due to attachment. If you're detached, you're transcendental. Where there's infection, the body, you can pinch your body so many places. It doesn't hurt so much. But if you have a boil, if you just touch it, it's painful. Have any of you ever had boils before? If you blow on it, it's painful. If even your glance touches it, it's painful. Because there's a disease there. So it's pain. So attachment is material disease. And it causes so much suffering. What are the pains of attachment? We're always in fear of losing it. And even when we have it, we're always trying to somehow or other sustain it. And it's never enough. Therefore, Krishna tells in Gita, Yehi samsparashaja bhoga dukajo naevate atyantavanta konteya nate shuramate buddha. The real intelligence is to not be attached to the sources of misery, which are born of contact between the senses and their objects. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, so a wise person does not really look for pleasure in them, because they bring about this attachment, and this attachment is like a fever which distracts our focus from the real purpose of life, which is to realize the self and its relationship with God. So yes, King Puranjan, he had so much, but now he finds that all he dedicated his life to cultivating and enjoying is causing him the ultimate suffering at the time of death, because he sees it is all being taken away from him. And under the misconception, he's thinking himself the doer of his activities. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma. That the bewildered soul thinks himself the doer of activities. Actually, they're carried out by nature. And Krishna, he is the controller of material nature. So Krishna is the ability in man. Krishna is the intelligence of the intelligent. Krishna is the strength of the strong. Thus, bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwara. If we want to achieve peace, we must understand these simple principles, that Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer of everything that exists. And he's our best well-wishing friend. So herein we find Puranjan, he's thinking he's the doer. I am supporting my family. I am raising my children, giving protection to my wife. I am giving nourishment to all the citizens of my kingdom. What is going to happen to them after I die? And death is coming. Sure as death. There's nothing he can do about it. beyond his control. It's really a miserable condition when you think you're the controller and something goes out of your control. Is it not? And the more you think you're controller, the more it's frustrating when circumstances are beyond your control. And the fact is, material nature is beyond our control. Time is controlling everyone, everywhere, at all times. We're being controlled by time. We're being controlled by the modes of passion, by the modes of ignorance, by the modes of goodness. Prabhupada gives us that nice painting in Bhagavad Gita where Maya Devi is puppeteer and we're puppets. And the strings of the three modes of material nature, she's just making us dance so many ways. And yet we're so foolish, we're thinking that I am dancing according to my wish. But actually we're being controlled. The mode of passion just pulls. The string of passion pulls. Let me eat this. Let me touch this. Let me see this. The mode of ignorant string pulls. And we're thinking in this way, let me go to sleep. Let me just forget this nonsense by some intoxication. Let me cause... I'm suffering. Let other people suffer. We're thinking we're controllers. Or the mode of goodness string. I am the beneficiary. I am giving charity. I am helping others and making them happy. In this way we think we're the doer. But actually we're puppets in the strings of Maya. Srila Prabhupada, he prayed to be a puppet. In Jaladutta he prayed, let me be a puppet, Krishna, and dance as you make me dance. But what we must understand is we're always puppets. We're always puppets of Krishna. He's the ultimate controller of all controllers. Tumi Sarveshwareshwara. Do we want to be controlled by Krishna as a loving servant? Or do we want to be controlled by material nature? Through the three modes. But we're always under control. A devotee who surrenders to Krishna, you are this controller, I am yours. That the devotee actually becomes completely fearless and can be peaceful and blissful in any situation, even the most frustrating difficulties. But to the degree we think, I am the Lord, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, we have to suffer. Because material nature is simply out of our control. To some extent, Maya Devi allows us to think we're the controllers, but the whole strategy is to make us more vulnerable to her sufferings. Yes? Now, I know none of you do fishing, but a good fisherman knows that if you want to catch a fish, as soon as that fish eats the bait, maybe it's a worm or a little fish, they don't just immediately pull it. Because it just comes right out of its mouth. No, they just give it line. Yes, they just give it more line. Let it think it's mine. This worm is mine to enjoy. And everybody else is saying, oh, there's a hook in it and it will catch you. But look, I'm eating it, I'm swallowing it, and I'm enjoying it and nothing's happening. So yes, the deeper it goes in within, the more the fish thinks, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Let everyone talk, but I know I'm controlling and enjoying. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and when it's really deep, then the fishermen... And you're trapped. You can't escape. Well, that's how Maya Devi works. She makes us really think that we're getting away with it. As devotees, this happens. We read Prabhupada's books, we know the philosophy, we know what is to be done and what is not to be done. But still, little enjoyment here. I did it. And I'm still chanting my rounds, and I'm still coming to see the deities. I'm still a devotee. And this way, Maya, oh, yes, you got away with it. It's not so bad, you see. Just go on. And then by the time she actually pulls, it's out of our control. We've swallowed the bait. So we are never the controllers. We're always the humble servant of the servant of the servant. That's always the safe way to be. So here, King Prachinibarhishad, he was a good controller. He was the king of the world. And he did an excellent job from a material point of view. But now death is coming, and he sees everything's going to be taken away. Who's going to take care of my children? Who's going to take care of my wife? Who's going to take care of my property? Who's going to take care of all of these things? Painful. It's all being stripped away. And thus, he is plagued with fear. Bajahure mana srinandanandana abhayat charanaravindare. This world is a place of fear. The most prominent expenditures within society today, all over the planet, are based on fear. How much time, energy, and money do people put into building hospitals and medicine? It's based on fear of disease, fear of death. And the cosmetic industry, yes, it's really all based on fear. People are afraid of not looking beautiful. People are afraid of looking old, even though they are. So they just cover the cracks and the crevices and they put so many things. People are afraid of smelling bad, so they put so many colognes and perfumes and so many deodorants and everything like that. I'm not saying you should use or not use. I'm just saying it's based on fear, whether you know it or not. And even, you know, eating. We're afraid of being hungry. Why do people work? One of the prime motivations for getting a job and working 9 to 5 or whatever hours we have is fear. We're afraid of poverty. We're afraid of hunger. We're afraid of not having a proper shelter or house. So we work so hard. People are so afraid of dishonor, afraid of failure. In school, students are very much afraid of not getting proper grades. So how much are people motivated by fear in this world? The major expenditures of most nations is defense, militaries, armies, fear. Of course, in America, they spend more money, the American people spend more money on gambling than they do on food. That's another story. But so much motivation of fear. And fear is a suffering condition. There is the saying, the only thing to fear is fear itself. But how can you not fear? As long as you're thinking, I am the body, I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer, then you must fear. Because the whole material nature is threatening you at every moment. Bajahure mana srinandanandana abhayat charanaravindare. Therefore, devotee prays to the mind, please, my mind, just remember Krishna. Just worship the son of Nanda. Then you will be fearless. And therefore, the only real happiness in life is in taking shelter of Krishna. Everything else is a strategic plan of Maya to perpetuate our fear and suffering. Everything else except taking shelter of Krishna. In 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Aghasura appeared. Big snake. Now how many of you, be honest, you don't have to raise your hands because people might see you, but be honest, how many of you are afraid of poisonous snakes? Even little ones. I remember some years ago we were in Ekachakra, Satchinandan Maharaj, Giriraj Maharaj, myself. We were in a very nice countryside. Near that, there were two trees, and Lord Nityananda Prabhu pushed them together so his friends could jump from branch to branch without disturbance. So we were under that tree, and there was about 700 devotees, and it was dark. And all of a sudden, everybody was jumping, and not everybody, but in a certain section, people were jumping up. I said, what happened? There was a 700 people sitting in a field, and a snake crawled through everyone. Do you remember that? It was actually Lord Nityananda's mercy because it woke everybody up. Because when I speak, the tendency is people sleep. So, a little snake this big, so much fear. Now, here's Aghasura. He was 8 miles long. What a snake that was. And his mouth, the bottom of his mouth was on the road, and the top was in the clouds. And when the cowherd boy saw this Aghasura, who was an associate of Kamsa, who manifested that form, some of the boys just started running away, and the other boy said, no, no, don't run, come back. Whatever is in the fields of Vrindavan is all Krishna's arrangement to make us happy. So this is just some beautiful statue that we're supposed to play on. But then as they came closer, and they felt his breath, and it wasn't an ordinary breath, because Aghasura was accustomed to eating flesh and blood. So when he breathed, it was all coming out, the smell of that. So one boy, oh, look at his eyes. His eyes are like blazing fire of anger. And his teeth are like mountain peaks. And his mouth is like, it's like a huge dark cave. And his tongue is like a highway. This is a snake. He's come to swallow us. Now these boys were only between 4 and 5 years old. They had not yet attained Poganda age. Yes, Brajbihari? They were just 5-year-old children. And they're seeing Aghasura laying right in front of him with his mouth open to swallow. And the boys were just laughing, smiling, and dancing. And the demigods, they were looking down. They were aghast. Because even though the demigods, they drink nectar, heavenly nectar, which is supposed to give you some sort of immortality, they were constantly in fear of Aghasura. Because he was such a dangerous, devouring demon. So here are these demigods like Indra, who have thunderbolts and powerful bodies and long lives, tremendous intelligence and weapons and armies. They're fearing Agha. And here are the little cowherd boys. What are their weapons? They have their flutes and their buffalo horns and their little sticks for herding the cows. But yet they just all looked at Krishna and smiled and laughed and danced right into the mouth of Aghasura. And they were saying, let's go in, Krishna will save us. Arivo. Now that's fearlessness.
You cannot become fearless by any amount of high-tech security devices in your home or your car. Yes, we see wealthy people. They have gates and guards and all kinds of cameras to protect them. But still they're in fear. And even if your body becomes powerful and you're great with weapons, still you fear. The little gopas, they were fearless. Something that the demigods could not fathom. Simply because they completely depended on Krishna. They had complete faith in Krishna. They took shelter of Krishna. Therefore, they just looked at Krishna and just laughing, they ran right into the mouth of Agasura. That is fearless. Shukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Parikshit that the way to become free of fear is to hear about, chant, and remember Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no other way to be fearless. Therefore, there's no other way to find real peace, real happiness. Just recently, I met some people in Los Angeles. Could I tell one little story? It's an example, which is actually very relevant to sitting here in Bhaktivedanta Manor. It's an example of how when one receives the mercy of a great soul, how one's life can be transformed and can become fearless. I happened to be meeting with some very, very dear friends of George Harrison. Prabhupada called him Sriman George Harrison, Harisan, who donated Bhaktivedanta Manor, who helped to print Krishna book, paid for it. He was an object of Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada loved him very much. In fact, during Prabhupada's last Leela in Vrindavan, he took off one of his rings and gave it to his, I believe, to Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj and said, "Give this to George." Prabhupada was remembering him because of his wonderful service attitude. So these people, they're not devotees. The people I was talking to, they're not devotees. But they knew him very well and knew his family very well. They were saying to me something that astounded them. They had never seen anything like this in their entire lives. People are in their 50s. They said George was completely free of any fear of death. In fact, he looked forward to death because he knew without doubt that Krishna was waiting for him. This is what they're telling me. Said he used to tell them that this material existence is a miserable place of bondage. The only real happiness is in Krishna. And therefore, I have no reservations. I tried to save my body as far as I could, but now that I see it's not possible, I'm awaiting with anticipation death, because I know the soul is forever and Krishna will protect me. So we never seen anyone so naturally and completely free of from fear of death. And he was actually very happy about it, smiling, joking. And then they told me, this is what they told me, he refused to take any painkillers or medications in the last stages because he was so eager to get the full experience of death. He did not want anything to distract his attention away from that experience of death, of dying. He wrote a song in the 70s, The Art of Dying.
that nothing is better than the art of dying. Yes? But he actually believed that. Well, he was living in a beautiful mansion. He had wife, he had child. But at the time of death, he just understood that Krishna is the supreme controller. That can only come, such a consciousness can only come by causeless mercy. The causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Now here is King Puranjan. He's a great soldier, he's a great warrior, he's a hero in every respect. He's a controller of a nation, of the world, at least he thinks. And he has so much fear and lamentation and frustration when the inevitable death comes before him, because he has not learned how to completely depend on Krishna as the supreme controller of all controllers. Example is given when an elephant goes into the raging current of a river. Even though the elephant is the most powerful species on land. Have you ever seen elephants? What they could do? I have personally seen big male elephants wrap their trunk around a sizable tree and just rip the right with the roots out of the ground and throw it. Hare Krishna. Now, no human being can do that in this age of Kali. They're powerful. But when the elephant goes into the current, the fast-moving current of a river, it's just washed away to death. But there's the little fish. What is the strength of a little fish this big compared to a male elephant? There's no comparison. But the elephant goes, those fish goes in the same river and it's swimming upstream and swimming across stream and swimming downstream and turning around and going upstream. Completely fearless. Prabhupada gives this example. Because the fish has learned to take shelter of the river and the elephant is fighting against it. You cannot fight against material nature and win. And whose nature? Krishna's nature. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara. But when we take shelter of Krishna, when we're depending on Krishna, when we have faith in Krishna, then every situation is an opportunity for devotional service. Even death itself is an opportunity for devotional service. When Prabhupada was in his last days, he looked up at his disciples and smiled and said, "Do not think that this will not happen to you." Hare Krishna. We should take that instruction very, very seriously. Sometimes we're young and we're thinking, when that time comes, which is a long time from now, then I'll think about these things. But it's not a long time. Life is a flash. I was recently speaking with my father, who's 81 years old. And he told me, "Son, when I look back at my childhood, getting my first job, getting married, having three children, and I look at my whole life," he said, "I'm telling you honestly, it seems like it's only been 5 minutes. 5 minutes, 81 years. That is how fast life passes." So Maharaj Parikshit, he asked this most relevant of all questions. What is the duty of a man about to die? And factually, every living being in this world is about to die. Whether it's 80 years or whether it's 5 minutes, it's not that much difference. The fact is, death is approaching at every second. So what will be our regrets? What will be our frustrations? What will be our fears in life and at death? We must address that. That is real intelligence. And there's only one way to overcome. Dhruva Maharaj, he completely took shelter of Krishna. Therefore, when the residents of Vaikuntha came on their airplane to take him back to Godhead, death personified became the step which Dhruva had to step on with his foot to board the plane. It's very symbolic. Because he took shelter of Krishna, death itself became a stepping stone for him to put his feet on to elevate him to Vaikuntha. So yes, for a devotee, death is just a step. It's a good step. Steps are a facility to bring us upward. Back home, back to Godhead. So why should we fear it? That nice story Prabhupada tells about the prophet. He said about a Vaishnav, whether you live or die, it doesn't really matter. Because you're depending on Krishna, you're serving Krishna, you're chanting Krishna's name now, and after death, you'll be doing the same thing. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. Vaishnavas die to live and live to spread the holy name around. That is our life. Our life is service. And service is eternal. It's the eternal nature of the soul. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nitya Das. Lord Chaitanya, the first teaching to Sanatana Goswami. Very broad, expansive philosophy he taught. But this was the beginning, that we're eternal servants of Krishna. The soul is eternal. Krishna is eternal. And the connection between the soul and Krishna, devotional service, is eternal. Well, this is our attachment, this is our attraction, to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's name, and to remember Krishna. In this way, we learn how to depend on Krishna, how to take shelter of Krishna. But Lord Chaitanya taught us how we have to chant if we want the real results. Trinadapi sunichena turor ivasi hishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we really want to taste the nectar of the holy name and chant always, we must be humble like the grass, tolerant like tree, eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. Because the humble state of mind, we don't think we're the controller. We don't think we're the proprietor. We don't think we're the doer. That is humility. Humility doesn't just mean, I am the most fallen, we speak these things. I am the dust at your feet. But then as soon as you do something I don't like, we're ready to attack you. Yes, it's not just words. It's a state of consciousness. To really understand that I'm totally dependent on Krishna. I'm helpless. I'm not the controller. I'm not the proprietor. I'm not the enjoyer. I'm not the doer. I'm just the servant. That famous story of a devotee who said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I am the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you are not the most anything. You are simply insignificant. Hare Krishna. Now, for a materialistic person to think themselves insignificant, I'm lower than the straw in the street. I'm more degraded than the worms in stool. If a materialistic person, if you were to say like this, they would lay you on the bed of a psychiatrist. What would they call it? They would call it, maniac depression, a lack of self-esteem, all these things. But for a devotee, it's actually a very blissful, healthy consciousness. Because we're seeing ourselves not out of frustration, comparing ourselves to other people in this world, we're frustrated. But we're actually seeing our eternal soul in relationship to Krishna. And therefore, this humble consciousness accesses Krishna's mercy because we realize we're completely helpless, we're completely dependent on Krishna. Prabhupada, in his prayers of Jaladutta, reveal the heart of an acharya. I'm just your puppet, Krishna. Make me dance as you want me to dance. That is humility. Prabhupada could roar like a lion and defeat all misconception. But he did it as Krishna's humble, surrendered puppet, not the doer. That is the fearless state in which we could chant Hare Krishna and happily... Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Happiness is important. If someone does something for you and they're miserable doing it, does that make you happy? Yes? But if somebody does something for you and they're happy doing it, that makes you happy. So Krishna wants to see his devotees happy. Even if he puts them in distress, devotee is happy accepting distress for Krishna. Pragosh Prabhu, the chairman of our GPC, he has very deep realizations of this year. All the pressures, all the burden, all the distress. But a devotee, even though, yes, it's difficult mentally, physically, but we're happy to do it. We're happy to suffer for Krishna because it's pleasing Guru, it's pleasing the Vaishnavas. That is real happiness. So Prabhupada said, chant and be happy. And in this way we can go back home, back to Godhead. And I have spoken over time. I'm sorry. But I thank you very much for your patience. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.